Are you sure? Positive. They didn't need much more persuading. The doctor looked at his wife, and they headed off together, and then Dorothy Coe followed them, presumably to a spare room somewhere. Doors opened and closed, and water ran and toilets flushed, and then the house went quiet. The heating system whirred, and the taped-up football players muttered and grunted and snored on the hallway floor, but apart from that, Reacher heard nothing at all. He sat upright on the hard chair and kept his eyes open and stared out into the dark. The duct-tape bandage itched his face. He did okay for 10 or 20 minutes, and then he slipped a little, like he knew he would, like he often had before, into a kind of trance, like suspended animation, half awake and half asleep, half effective and half useless. He was a less-than-perfect sentry, and he knew it. But then, practically all sentries were less than perfect. It was any army's most persistent problem. Half awake and half asleep, half effective and half useless. He heard the car and he saw its lights, but it was a whole stubborn second before he understood he wasn't dreaming. Chapter 50. The car came in from the right, from the east, preceded by headlight beams and road noise. It slowed to a walk and passed behind the parked Cornhusker pickup, and then it rolled on and passed behind the parked SUV. Then it turned and nosed into the driveway with a crunch and a squelch from its wheels on the gravel, and then it stopped. And then Reacher saw it. There was enough light scatter and enough reflection to identify it. It was the dark blue Chevrolet. The Italians. Reacher picked up the Remington. The car stayed where it was. No one got out. It was 60 yards away, half in and half out of the driveway mouth, just sitting there, lights on, idling. A tactical problem. Reacher had 3 innocent non-combatants in a wood-frame house. There were 2 parked cars in the driveway and 2 on the road for cover. There were 2 opponents, and the house had windows and a door, both front and back. Not ideal conditions for a gun battle. Best hope would be for the Italians to approach the front door on foot. Game over right there. Reacher could swing the door open and fire point blank. But the Italians weren't approaching on foot. They were just sitting in the car, doing nothing. Talking, maybe, and scouting around. Reacher could see dim flashes of white as necks craned and heads turned. They were discussing something. Angelo Mancini was saying, "This is a waste of time. He ain't in there, he can't be. Not unless he's hanging out with 3 of their football players." Roberto Cassano nodded. He glanced over his shoulder at the pickup truck and the SUV on the shoulder, and then he glanced ahead at the gold GMC Yukon on the driveway. It was parked in front of an older truck, he said. "That's the old woman's right, from the farm." Mancini said, "Sleepover time." "I guess Mahmini's boy was right about something. They know the doctor is the weak link. They've got him staked out." "Not much of a trap, all things considered. Not with their cars parked out front. No one is going to walk into that." "Which is good for us, in a way. They're wasting their resources, which gives us a better chance somewhere else. Do you want to check here, just in case?" "What's the point? If he's in there, he's already their prisoner." "That's what I was thinking. But then I thought, not necessarily. They could be his prisoner." "One against 3. You saw what he did to the guy in the Cadillac's trunk." "I don't know. I kind of want to check, I guess. And maybe we should, but you heard the man. This is a competition now. We can't waste time."
"Wouldn't take much time."
"I know. But we'll look like idiots if he's not in there. The football players will be straight on the phone to the Duncans, all yucking it up about how we came looking in a place he couldn't possibly be."
"No one said there are style points involved."
"But there are.
There's always style points involved. This is a long game. There's a lot of money involved. If we lose face, we'll never get it back.
So where?
Tassano looked again at the old woman's truck. If she's here, then her house is empty tonight. And people looking for places to hide love empty houses.
Reacher saw them back out and drive away again. At first, he didn't understand why. Then he concluded they were looking for Seth Duncan. They had pulled up. They had eyeballed the parked cars. They had seen that the Mazda wasn't among them, and they had gone away again. Logical. He put the Remington back on the floor and planted his feet and straightened his back and stared out into the darkness. Nothing else happened for 90 long minutes. No one came, no one stirred. Then pale streaks of dawn started showing in the sky to Reacher's right. They came in low and silver and purple, and the land slowly lightened from black to gray, and the world once again took solid shape all the way to the far horizon. Rags of tattered cloud lit up bright overhead, and a knee-high mist rose up off the dirt. A new day. But not a good one, Reacher thought. It was going to be a day full of pain, both for those who deserved it and for those who didn't. He waited. He couldn't get his Yukon out, because he had no key for Dorothy Coe's pickup truck. It was possibly in her coat, but he wasn't inclined to go look for it. He was in no hurry. It was winter time. Full daylight was still an hour away. 500 miles due north, up in Canada, just above the 49th parallel, because of the latitude, dawn came a little later. The first of the morning light filtered down through the needles of the towering pine and touched the white van in its summer picnic spot at the end of the rough grassy track. The driver woke in his seat and blinked and stretched. He had heard nothing all night long. He had seen nothing. No bears, no coyotes, no red foxes, no moose, no elk, no wolves, no people. He had been warm because he had a sleeping bag filled with down, but he had been very uncomfortable because panel vans had small cabs, and he had spent the night folded into a seat that didn't recline very far. It was always on his mind that the cargo in the back was treated better than he was. It rode more comfortably. But then, it was expensive and hard to get, and he wasn't. He was a realistic man. He knew how things worked. He climbed out and took a leak against the pine's ancient trunk. Then he ate and drank from his meager supplies, and he pushed his palms against his aching back, and he stretched again to work out the kinks. The sky was brightening. It was his favorite time for a run to the border. Light enough to see, too early for company. Ideal. He had just 20 miles to go, most of them on an unmapped forest track, to a point a little less than 4,000 yards north of the line. The transfer zone, he called it. The end of the road for him, but not for his cargo.